So this is Pali chant. This chant is done in all the southern schools of Buddhism. Those of you who don't know much about Buddhism, there are two main divisions, southern school and northern school. And the southern school is sometimes called the Theravadin school, or the way of the elders. And Pali was the language that was spoken by Shakyamuni Buddha. So most of the teaching in the southern school is in Pali. And this is the meditation and the practice that one would do, the contemplation that one would practice in order to develop a heart of boundless love. And if you do that, you walk in beauty, you sleep well, you wake well, you eat well, you live well. That's what it's said, that loving kindness results in those things, which are all nice things to be able to do. Quite useful in life. This is how pragmatic Buddhism really is. And Pat was doing a retreat where she was working with this sutra, and she wanted it on tape chanting, so that's what we're going to do now, okay? So it's Karaniya Metta Sutta. Karaniyam mata kusalina yantam santam param abhisamecha sako ujucha sujucha suvacho cha samudu anatimani santu sako cha sukaro cha pakicho cha salahukawuti Santindriyo cha nipako cha pakapo kulesu ananukito na cha kudam samachare kinchi yena winyupare upawadeyum sukino wa kemino hotu sabe satava wantu sukitata Yekechi pana putati tasa watavarawa nawasesa Dikawa ye mahantava majima rasaka nukatula Ditawa ye wadita Echa dure wasanti awidure Bhutava sambhave siva sabe satava vantu sukhitata na paro param nikupeta nyati manyeta katachinam kanchi vyaro sana patika sanya Nanya manya sadukamicheya matayata niyamputam ayusai kaputanurake evampi sababhutesu manasambhavaye aparimanam metancha sabalokasmim Manasambhavaye aparimanam Udham madhocha tiriyancha Asabadam averam asapatam Titam charam nisinova Sayanova yavatasa vigatamidho Etam satim adhiheya Brahma metam viharamitamahu Ditinchanu pagama silava dasanena sampano Kamesu vinayagetam Nahi jatukapaseyam punareti Did you give those to people? If they want to keep them, they can. You're welcome to keep them. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So thank you for your request of two subjects. One, the eight precious symbols, which are here and here. Tibetan art, religious art, in both these cases. And the other one for teaching on the Paticca-samuppada. And I think it's important for you to know that the Paticca-samuppada is what makes Buddhism different from Hinduism. There's a bit. Buddha was a Hindu, and how he created a change in teaching, a change in view, a change in worldview, was by insight into causality. That was what happened. He had an insight into causality, understood how reality is created, and therefore the whole teaching of Buddhism arose. At that point where he understood causality, his understanding opened the energy of his consciousness vastly. And this is the turning of the wheel. This is the real turning of the wheel, where the whole wheel of the energy of his being was no longer limited to the wheel of an individual, but the consciousness opened to the universal truth of coming into being and passing away. How manifestation and dissolution flow, how they play, and what is a self, these principles. It was his insight into that, which is called the Paticca-samuppada, that differentiates Buddhism from Hinduism. So you're asking a big question when you say, well, tell us something about the Paticca-samuppada. Oh yeah, okay, I'll just do that. Nothing to it, eh? Let's all just sit here and get enlightened and then you'll totally understand it. What a good idea. But I can describe to you the framework and indicate the vastness. The whole unfolding of Buddhism. And come on right up. Come on down. Lots of space. Here's a lovely cushion. Oh, you got a place there. Right. The way that Buddhism is described is what? How is Buddhism described? Most commonly. I know, esoteric, I know, difficult, I know, all those things. I know, alternative, I know it. But, you know, classically,
Initiated path.
Is that what it's called?
Awakening.
Buddhism? Isn't it called the middle way?
Oh, okay.
It's the most common way it's described, isn't it? The middle way. Middle of what?
Two extremes.
What extremes?
Nihilism and...
Nihilism.
And what is... Well, I don't know the word for me, but it can be permanent or permanent.
Eternalism.
Self. Eternalism, yeah. Okay.
The middle way between the two. Nihilism and eternalism of what?
Of a self.
Of a self. Exactly. Because the Hindu tradition, the Aryan tradition, was basically that cause and effect exists, but it's basically one way. You start as a lowly worm. Many people's view of evolution is exactly the same. Many people, when they hear about evolution, they think it talks about going in one direction. Don't they? They don't think it means modes of survival influence consciousness influenced by environment, influenced by consciousness, influenced by, you know? They don't think it's a two-way street. They think you're on the scale up. Isn't that true? There is this bias. That is not what Darwin meant, and it is certainly not what the Buddha discovered. What the Buddha discovered with the Paticca-samuppada is dependent, conjoined influence, conjoined causation, conditional arisings. So if there is only one way, there has to be an eye going up it. Doesn't there? There has to be an atta, a self, a soul. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. If there is no soul, and then there's nowhere to go, well then there's nothing. So one is there is an eternal self that's continuously just moving along. Would you be more comfortable in the corner, or is, what do you...
Well, it's just hiding.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if you want to sit on that in the corner, there's space there. Take your time, good, and don't rush. Take your little... Do you want to pass her her... That is just about... Is that mahogany? That's a classy seat. You need a carved, like a really elegant pew or something. Little cherubs and gargoyles. And then an umbrella. In my next lifetime, I'm going to be a meditation seat designer. Not. Where was I? Oh, yes, eternalism and nihilism. Are you following this? It's not so difficult yet, is it? Either there is, if there is a sense of one direction, somewhere to get to, then there has to be a goal which implies a self who's going to reach that goal, or there has to be no such thing. It's all just accidental. Right? Those are the two views. Now, if you want to read, most, from my point of view, one of the most brilliant books written on the Paticca-samuppada, it's Joanna Macy. I'm going to quote a little bit from it tonight. This is just a brilliant book. It's all Paticca-samuppada and general systems theory. Mutual causality in Buddhism and general systems theory. Joanna Macy. This book is absolutely brilliant. She's very scholarly when she writes, so you might want to have a dictionary beside you and take your time. But it's worth it. It's worth you doing some research and discovering the richness of the English language to understand this book. It's quite wonderful. You'll find your thought patterns begin to open into richer areas. I really recommend this book. So I'm going to do a couple of little quotes here and there. Okay. Early Buddhism can be characterized as a system of metaphysics which contains an analysis of existence into its component elements and establishes a certain number of ultimate data called dharmas or laws, fixed truths, some things that are fixed, Every combination of these data was then declared to represent a nominal, not an ultimate reality. So you have relative truth and absolute truth in Buddhism. A substantial soul was thus transformed into a stream, the part that a soul played of like evolution going one direction, is then understood as a stream of continuously flowing discrete moments. Like a candle that is burning. When you light the candle, is it the same flame 5 minutes later? Is it burning the same wax? Is it burning the same wick? Do you understand that? There is a continuum of a series of discrete moments, each of which has laws and is arising dependent on conditions. But there is no flame that exists unchanging throughout time and space. Is that good? Does that give you a sense of it? Into a stream of continuously flowing discrete moments of sensation or pure consciousness, which is called vijnana or vijnana in Sanskrit, accompanied by moments of feeling, of ideas, ideation, of volition or motive, desire. And there you have the five aggregates. Do you want me to repeat that?
Yes, please.
A substantial soul was thus transformed into a stream of continuously flowing discrete moments of sensation or pure consciousness, vijnana, accompanied by moments of feeling, of ideation, volition. Okay, that's the four aggregates. Matter was conceived on the same pattern as a flow of momentary flashes without any continuant stuff, but characterized by impenetrability and representing the senses and sense data. The world was thus transformed into a cinema, a movie. The categories of substance, quality, and motion, for momentary flashes can't possess any movement or motion, it's a flash, were denied. But the reality of sense data and of the elements of mind were admitted. So you have these very famous Zen koans, two monks arguing about the flag. One is saying the flag's moving, the other is saying the wind moves. And they're arguing back and forth, and then the third one comes along and says the mind moves. Because essentially there is no flag. Essentially there is no thing called the flame. Essentially, temporarily, there is the flame. The candle is burning. The flag is blowing. Relatively. And if you start to examine that relatively, it isn't a flag, it's a piece of material, and the colors are made from this, and it's sewn together. Do you understand? As you begin to really analyze the relative, it becomes eventually discrete moments. This is exactly what is taught in quantum physics, isn't it? Exactly what is taught in quantum physics. So relative truth has no permanent identity. And sensory data, that beautiful part, the reality of sensory data and the elements of mind is admitted. It's the mind that moves. It's consciousness that is moving, not the flag. Consciousness is saying, oh, there's a flag blowing in the wind. Now, let's take it from another direction. When a baby is very young, any of you in this room ever seen a baby? Can I have a show of hands, please? We're doing very well on this. This is just excellent. Have any of you seen a baby under the age of 2 months? Could I have a show of hands here? This is just wonderful. I am just so pleased with this group tonight. It's just great. Have you ever noticed a baby of under 2 months doing this? Show of hands. Have you had the great honor of being there when the baby went? Have you seen that moment where it isn't just, but there's like object? Do you know what you're witnessing? You're witnessing that being able to operate consciousness in time and space. Where it isn't a series of discrete moments, but it is an object that is moving through space. And so it isn't a discrete moment of one hand and then another hand and another hand, 50,000 hands, right? With their fingers all pointed different ways. But it's one hand from different angles. It has made an object. Mind has created an object. Reality is on its way. Do you know what an undertaking that is? Do you know what humans do? We create reality. It is profound that we do that. And we learn it before we're 6 months old. We learn how to organize thought into making out of series of discrete moments into a reality. Then we get attached to, like or dislike, theater. What does the Buddha say? He says, there is no inherent self. There is change, movement, energy. There is impulse. There are discrete moments. And there are sense doors. And there is consciousness. What does this mean? It means no inherent self. Doesn't mean no cause and effect. It doesn't mean no movement. It doesn't mean anything about the world is diminished. It's just no longer all fitted into your movie theater. It's impossible to grasp, isn't it? It is impossible to grasp. So I just want to give you first a broad outline, and then we're going to start chipping. Is that good? Mm-hmm. Is this what you wanted me to talk about?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Well, that's good. We're doing okay then.
All these elementary data were conceived as obeying causal laws. There are laws. There is dharma. There is fixed law. There are laws. Unchangeable, immutable laws. But the conception of causality was adapted to the character of these entities which could neither move nor change, but could only appear and disappear. That's what discrete moments do. They appear and disappear. The flame appears and disappears, and another flame arises up because the conditions are right and disappears, and another one. You know, remember those, I don't know, you're all so young. Remember those during the Second World War, those big fat comic books we used to have? Remember them? And you could flip the corner. There was a bunch of still pictures, and if you took your thumb, and they were about this thick, and you flip the corner, then the pictures actually moved. And it was like a film or something. Wasn't that great, eh? Like, we couldn't afford movies, but you go into the books and wow, I just went to the movies. And what was it composed of? A bunch of discrete moments, which, what is it that's moving? You know, because you're telling a story about how they're moving, right? Do you get that? That's very interesting, eh? Eh? But could only appear and disappear. Appear and disappear. Very fast. Very fast. Even faster than those pages flipped by your thumb there. Even faster than that. Causation was called dependently coordinated origination. Coordinated through dependency. Originating through coordinated dependency. Pratitya sam utpada. And in Pali, pratitya sam samupada. Upada. Or dependent existence. The meaning of it was that every momentary entity sprang into existence or flashed up in coordination with other moments. And generally speaking, people think that dependent origination is like they think of Darwin's theory of evolution, starts here and ends here. But it isn't. It's quantum. Cluster, 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 mind joins the dots. So it takes a while. And then mind joins the dots, and then you never see it again, like discrete. Now it is your hand moving through space. And you know that's true because you saw it. To see yourself seeing that, to see your mind creating that reality, to trust that as created by mind, and to know also an absolute truth where that reality is not the only ruling factor. That's what the Patichasamapada does. There are two main veils that obscure reality, that get us caught up in illusion, hoping for the wrong thing, trying to make people different than they are, trying to make ourselves different than we are, right? There are two main veils that catch us, that create suffering. One is the veil of views, small views, false views, limited views, my view versus your view, right? All that stuff. The other one is the veil of conflicting emotion, emotion that is in conflict with what is occurring. Those are the two veils. There are two teachings in Buddhism that both give you, if you work with them, the way to break those veils totally asunder. One of them is the Patichasamapada, which shows how view is formed. That's what it does. It shows you how the discrete moments are created into an evolution from my point of view. where I am going, whether I have made any progress. It's a non-issue. It's not possible anyway. It's just another movie. Welcome to my movie theater. I am making great progress. I have starred, directed, written the plot. I sell the popcorn. Right? When I've got the movie right that I can't see any cracks in, then I'll show it to you. So, from your point of view is, well, I'll look at your movie if you'll look at mine. Isn't it? I don't think that's wrong. I think that's pretty well it. We're selling tickets to each other all the time, aren't we? Various little marquees we have, don't we? Little marquees. Our advertising.
A little criticism to your movie. A little critique.
Well, I'm the critic as well. Didn't I mention that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do my own critiques.
You're 3 stars.
If you want to critique, you can, but I'll only believe you're critiquing your own movie no matter what you say. So the Patijasamuppada is the teaching on how to understand film. David Bohm said, reality is the thing you think about. That is the most beautiful definition in English I have ever heard of the Patijasamuppada. The Patijasamuppada shows all the elements of how you think about a thing and make it reality. And it does that by analyzing discrete moments and the 5 aggregates interacting with them. It takes a freeze of an image in the mind and breaks it down into all the component parts. It's like a slice of reality, really thin, you know, thin slice of reality held up to the light and examined and analyzed. An autopsy of reality. That's what the Patijasamuppada. So it's not something that you would start by trying to understand. You would start by repeating it, and that's what you do. As a novice and in monasteries, you chant it every day. When someone dies, you chant the Patijasamuppada, because maybe if they're not too busy trying to evolve somewhere, that consciousness can actually grasp it. It's one of the most important things to do when you're dying. You know, at funerals, it's one of the prerequisite things to chant, Patijasamuppada. When the body is in the flames, that's when it's chanted. It's very specific. The other veil, emotion, conflicting emotion, the great teaching that shows you what emotion is what? The Heart Sutra, Prajna Paramita Sutta. Which says what? Form is not separate from emptiness. And emptiness, what? Is not separate from form. Feeling is not separate from emptiness. And emptiness is not separate from feeling. You can't have conflicting emotion if it's the same inner and outer. If you look into my eyes and see you, there is no conflict of emotion. None. only if there is other. If you look into your eyes and see other, there's conflict. Right? Me versus me. Conflict. Hate. Criticism. Right? Anxiety. Right? Trying to be other than where you are. Right? Isn't it true? Look into your own being and see something that you don't like, that's conflict of emotion. As soon as you have that duality, there's conflict of emotion. Is that true? Form is not separate from emptiness. And emptiness is not separate from form. Feeling is not separate from emptiness. And emptiness is not separate from feeling. Sensation is not separate from emptiness. And emptiness is not separate from sensation. Mental factors are not separate from emptiness. And emptiness is not separate from mental factors. Consciousness is not separate from emptiness. Emptiness is not separate from consciousness. The one taste, the at-one-ment, which is the great atonement, the at-one-ment. The one taste, no conflicting emotion. And that is also very difficult to understand. So usually you chant that, you know, for 10, 15, 20 years, and you begin to get some ideas. Because you introduce those concepts and you start working with them. You don't have to understand them. That's our Western bias. Our Western bias is my mind should immediately grasp everything or it's worthless. Isn't it true? Mm-hmm. Well, excuse me, but rote is a very good way to have a deeper understanding. You know? Repeating something over and over that's worthy of repeating, like a poem. Like the name of someone you love. And always finding a new person answers. Oh, excuse me. But rote gives you the greatest wisdom. Just because you get a quick flash of understanding and think you know something does not mean you're intelligent. Just means you found one more way to separate yourself from the rest of the world, usually, doesn't it? I got the answer. You didn't get it. Oh, let me explain it to you. Oh, how kind of you. Hi, Bob. Is this interesting so far? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have these two teachings. Paticca Samuppada, which is basically looking at how reality is constructed and how it dissolves. Because that's how it goes, isn't it? Isn't that how it goes? Must be in here somewhere. There's the precepts. This is my chant book from Thailand. That's Thai writing. Isn't that great? It's definitely been around a few blocks. I would chant it from memory, but I don't trust my memory. Where's that little book? I bet you it's in here. because it's been a while since I chanted it. Paticca Samuppada, it's the very last thing in the book. Very last thing in the index. So, avijja apachaya. Avijja means ignorance, ignoring, either willful or unwillful ignoring. Avijja, dependent on avijja, arises the sankharas. Sankhara is the formation of propensities, actions, formations of possible actions, formations of impulse actions, right? Does that make sense to you? This is like the very small movement yet. This is not when you actually manifest yet. The first, there is willful or unwillful ignoring something because you want something else. Does that make sense to you? Have you ever done that? I am looking right at you, Mike.
Sure.
Yeah, so you understand what I'm saying here.
Sure.
Don't look at Mike, let me look at him. So, when you willfully ignore something, then there are all kinds of propensities, all kinds of possibilities, all kinds of motives arise conjoined with that. Like if you don't like what you're ignoring, that serves them right. Right? Like all kinds of them, or I'll get back to them later, or, you know, all kinds of, many, many, sankhara. So where there is ignorance, sankhara arises immediately. Propensities. Where there are propensities, consciousness arises. That becomes a before there is a consciousness of any type, there has to be a desire or a propensity.
That's pretty valuable.
I told you, this is like a microscopic. Mm-hmm. If there are sankharas, vijnana will arise, consciousness will arise. If there is vijnana consciousness, then a mind-body will form appropriate to that consciousness. Cat, dog, person. And can sometimes be in the same body. Sometimes I have felt myself being like dog consciousness in this body, but then it quickly went away. Any of you ever been taken over by an emotion?
Yeah.
Sure. So it's dependent on consciousness, namarupa. Dependent on namarupa, the six senses. Then you sense differently. You know, sometimes some moods you sense one way, some moods you sense another, right? The six sense doors. When you see a hand or when you see something in your way because you want to see past it. Right? Depending on the six sense doors, then comes the mental contact and the object kind of stuff starts, right? It's a contact. And then through contact, sensory contact, then desire arises. I like it, I dislike it. I want more. I don't want it again. Through desire, then conditioned craving. Let's let this propensity get stronger. Another thought moment, a discrete moment, the same thing will arise. Through craving, clinging, the word tanha, it's the same word that our word thirst comes from, and it has the same meaning. thirst. Through tanha or thirst is conditioned the process of becoming, that sense of going somewhere, getting something, becoming something, performing the right dance, etc. Through process of becoming is conditioned the next moment, the flame born again. You know, Buddhists are born again and 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 again, and that's in 5 minutes. Continuously being born, continuously arising out of the void. That's what we're doing. Continuously the self is arising out of the void, and there are these little gaps in between the arising, but you don't see them. You only notice them when you do them like going to sleep or drifting off for a moment. When you meditate, you notice those gaps a little more. Don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You notice you weren't there, and you notice you weren't thinking. And then the propensity of what arises is like at a slightly different... It's the same, but it's different. If been in an accident, you can see that gap really clearly. A really strong accident where there is a really strong change in your whole being. There are things that stop and other propensities take over. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Because I know when I was hit by that truck that hit me when I was 16, that there were a whole lot of aspects of my character that were finished then. They had their answer. And there were a whole lot of seeds of energy, desires, options, things that suddenly began. There was a radical change in the selfing. Or you could say it was a death. There was continuously death, rebirth. So this is the Paticca-samuppada. This is the insight the Buddha had when he sat under the tree. And he describes this insight to this bunch of guys, 5 guys, who had previously been practicing eating 1 grain of rice less a day for several months, until they all looked rather disgusting, worse than anorexia. Ugh. They probably didn't even have good bowel movements. They had nothing in them, you know? And they were practicing being even better than each other and sitting on beds of nails, and you know? Because they were trying to move the consciousness beyond the body. And this is a very common spiritual idea, isn't it? This world is not my home. I'm going to torture my body so I can go to where I really belong. What a good idea. Oops, it does. And that it wasn't a clear mind. And that it wasn't working. So he left them, and they said, oh, that quitter, you know, let's really do it now. We'll show him. And he went off, and he sat there by this river, and this woman came along and said, you look a little hungry. And he said, well, yes, as a matter of fact. And she gave him some yogurt with rice, sort of this milk rice pudding, like a rice pudding kind of thing. And he ate it, and he felt much better. And his mind became clearer. And he thought, oh yeah, that's definitely a good idea. Okay, not a practice of torture. That doesn't work. That doesn't keep the mind clear. And not a practice of indulgence. That doesn't work. That doesn't keep the mind clear. Which is also one of the middle way. It's not the middle way. When people talk about the middle way, they're talking about neither extremism nor nihilism. But it is also, in terms of practice, neither total discipline nor total indulgence. These are all things we learn from our own lives, aren't they? There is a point where it just isn't attractive jumping off the cliff anymore. And nor is it attractive staying in your living room with the blinds closed pretending there are no cliffs. Right? It's got to be... if it's going to be a cliff, a parachute. So after he left them, he went and sat under a tree and he said, okay, I wonder if it is possible to somehow break through this continuous desiring and craving and dissatisfactoriness of life. And the parable of how he awakened goes that he put his bowl in the stream. And he said, if this stream will float, if this bowl will go against the current, then it must be possible. And he put his bowl in the current, in the river flowing by. And the bowl went against the current. If this heart can move against the usual streaming of desire, then it's possible. So that's the parable. And so the bowl does go. And so then he says, okay. So then the next thing he does is, remember on that retreat out in the woods that we did out there by Hinton, where I kept saying to you about contentment, contentment? The next thing he did was he said, okay, my body is in not bad shape because I ate now and I've rested. He actually made a cushion of kusha grass to sit on. He wasn't just sitting on rocks or glass or, you know, painful things. He actually made a cushion for his body. I'm treating my body with respect. Now, what about the mind? Well, I think it will be more clear if I remember sometime where I was really content. And he did a review of his life because he had done a lot of meditation on reviewing, going back in time. And he remembered one time when he was about 4 years old, when he was sitting under a tree, and his nurse, his nana, his whatever, babysitter, whatever, nursemaid, left him for a little while. And this light was coming through the leaves. You know what that's like when you're about four? And you're all by yourself, the birds are singing, and there's a slight breeze blowing. And he was just sitting there like that, and he said, that is a good mind state. No slouch, the Buddha. He could recognize a good mind state. He said, yes, that is a mind state that has the power for me to ask a real question. Because it isn't already full of anxiety. God? Isn't that neat? I think it's just so beautiful the way he just set it up through bitter experience. You know, he didn't do these things once the first time he tried. He made at least once all the same stupid mistakes I've made, but he only had to make them once. You know, what's that story about the dog and vomit? Well, I do tend to. You know, not him. Heard it once. Did it once. Yeah, this seems to be good. Yeah, this seems to be good. Yeah, this seems to be good. So he established the body in some reasonable contentment. He established the mind in reasonable contentment. And then he began to practice concentration. And he went through the jhanas, developed better concentration, both the form and formless jhanas. So he went, explored all the different ways of holding the mind focused on form and then holding the mind focused on formlessness and then back down again and then back up and then somewhere between form and formless jhanas. He had a sudden, he asked the question of cause, of causality. And then the whole of the Paticca-samuppada arose. From that came the Four Noble Truths. Because that Paticca-samuppada is the second noble truth. What's the first noble truth?
there's suffering.
There is suffering. There is dissatisfactoriness. What's the second noble truth? It has cause. What is the paticca-samuppada? The law of dependent causality. Discrete moments. The second noble truth is the paticca-samuppada. The paticca-samuppada is the second noble truth. Yeah?
It's amazing the fact that modern science is saying there are no local causes. So you're getting everything is connected to everything.
Well, that's what she's talking about when she's talking about general systems theory. I mean, Joanna Macy is brilliant in introducing how Western philosophy and Western thought and causality, how they cast light on each other. Because the Buddha did not have the science of our time, the observation techniques we had. I'm not saying that. I'm saying he did not have this, you know. So what she has done is she has taken a Western theory and an Eastern theory and used them with each other. This is a brilliant book. You would find this book wonderful, Maurice. Thus have I and Ananda heard. At one time the Lord Buddha dwelt at Benares at Isipatana in the Deer Park. There the Lord addressed the five monks, Panchavagi. And this is, he goes back to after he awakens and has the Four Noble Truths, and he spends some time doing whatever Buddhas do, deciding that it's too simple, what he has to teach is too simple, nobody will grasp it. Because it is, it's too simple to think, oh, it's a perceptive difference. Nobody will grasp it. Nobody will grasp that. They'll say, yeah, well, but what about war? Won't they? Will I have to leave my studio? Won't they? They'll say all those things, won't they? But where will I get the money? Won't they say those things? In fact, when the Buddha finally did decide to teach, he's walking along and he meets the first man he meets. The man comes along and says, oh, you look like you know something. The guy actually says this to him. And so the Buddha says, well, yes, in fact, I have awakened. And the guy says, well, that's nice. And he says the equivalent of, well, excuse me, I got to take these groceries home to my wife. And exactly. So, you know, the Buddha decides he's not going to teach because it's too simple. No one will understand it. Because we all want it to be more complicated. We all want our problem to be difficult. Don't we? Because then it makes us somehow special, doesn't it? And your problem is difficult. And you are special. And it's all very simple. So then Brahma, the god, the big guy, He comes along and he says, well, you know, he'd like a little more merit in the merit bank. So he comes along and he says, well, you know, there are a few people with just a little bit of dust in their eyes, you know, for their sake. And the Buddha looks around with his omnis, you know, he's got all the omnis now, his omnipotence and omnipresence. And, you know, so he puts his omni on and he looks around and he says, oh yeah, there are a few beings there with little dust in their eyes. Okay, for them I'll do it. So then he's walking and he meets this guy, which is the first sermon he gives. You know, I've awakened. And the guy says, that's nice, I'll take my groceries now. You know, and that is exactly... You know, that's why I actually believe that Buddhism is recording the truth. Because that is exactly, as soon as you decide to do something, the first time you try it, it usually doesn't work, does it? Isn't that true? And if you actually are going to honor and give freely of what you have to give, you have to actually do that. Or you're just going to collect evidence about why you were right not to trust anybody in the first place. Right? But you have to know that it's your choice to share this, to offer this, to give this, and you're giving it without conditions. And I just think that's perfect, you know? That's exactly what would have happened. I mean, certainly. Isn't that true? Every time you decide you're going to do something, you walk out the door and somebody challenges it? Do you really mean it? This is the universe being compassionate. Are you sure you want to do this? Get out of my way so I can do it. I mean, yes. So then, after that, he goes to his five brothers, and that's what this teaching is. This is called the first sermon. And there the Lord addressed the five monks. These two extremes, monks, are not to be practiced by one who has gone forth from the world. What are these two? That means someone who has decided to take the spiritual path as their full life's energy. And what are these two? That conjoined with the passions and luxury, low, vulgar, common, ignoble, and useless. And that conjoined with self-torture, painful, ignoble, and useless. He's telling this to these monks, these five guys that he's been starving with for months, right? He's just going right up to them and saying, Patan, right? Avoiding these two extremes, the Tathagata, the thus gone, or the gone to thusness, has gained the enlightenment of the middle path, which produces insight and knowledge. And tends to calm to higher knowledge. Enlightenment. Nibbana. Nibbana means peace. The cessation of causality, of being subject to causality. The cessation of being subject to causality. Causality is still running, but there is no one subject to it. And what, monks, is the middle path of which the Tathagata has gained enlightenment, which produces insight and knowledge, and tends to calm to higher knowledge, enlightenment, nirvana? This is the Noble Eightfold Way, namely right views or whole views, right intention or whole intentions, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right efforts, right mindfulness, right concentration. This, monks, is the middle path of which the Tathagata has gained enlightenment, which produces insight and knowledge and tends to calm to higher knowledge, enlightenment, nirvana. Now, this, monks, is the noble truth of pain. Birth is painful. Old age is painful. Sickness is painful. Death is painful. Sorrow, lamentation, dejection, and despair are painful. Contact with unpleasant things is painful. Not getting what one wishes is painful. In short, the five groups of form, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness of grasping with the five aggregates is painful. You hear that? Grasping with the five aggregates. Not the five aggregates, but grasping. The grasping of the five with the five aggregates. Not formation. Not being here, but grasping, believing the movie, going somewhere, not seeing the discrete moments, believing in a self and an other is painful. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the cause of pain, the craving which tends to rebirth, combined with pleasure and lust, finding pleasure here and there, namely craving for passion, the craving for existence, the craving for non-existence. which is the thirst, the tanha that I talked about, the thirst in the dependent origination when I read that. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the cessation of pain. And tanha is usually a short form meaning dependent origination. Okay? Shorthand. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the cessation of pain, the cessation without a remainder of craving, the abandonment, forsaking, release, non-attachment. That's the cessation. The truth, the cessation is when you strike the craving. How do you strike the craving? By realizing there is no permanent self. That there are discrete moments. That it's your movie. By letting go of clinging to a permanent, unchanging sense of self. By realizing that the self is always changing. By not clinging to I and mine. Because, you know, does like arise without an I? Huh? Does dislike arise without an I? You don't know, do you?
No.
Interesting. Dependent. They're dependent on each other. Now this, monks, is the noble truth of the way, and then he repeats the Eightfold Path. And this is the noble truth of pain. Thus, monks, among doctrines unheard before in me, insight and knowledge arose, wisdom arose, knowledge arose, light arose. Isn't that interesting? Light arose. This noble truth of pain must be comprehended. The noble truth of dissatisfactoriness must be comprehended. You have to look directly into it. Not try to get away from it. Not blame someone else. Not go numb. Not refuse to feel your emotions. You have to look directly into it. You can't until you think that you are not good or bad. As long as you think that you are good or you are bad, you're not going to be able to look at your emotions. So if you can't look at your emotions, then you better do a lot of things to convince yourself how wonderful you are. Then you should be able to look at your emotions. Right? Get some calm first, then look at your emotions. This noble truth of pain must be comprehended. When you look at your emotions, you find out they're basically empty. Winds, they're winds. Thus, monks, among doctrines unheard before, and they're impermanent. In me, insight and knowledge arose, wisdom arose, knowledge arose, light arose. It has been comprehended. Thus, monks, among doctrines unheard before, in me insight and knowledge arose, wisdom arose, knowledge arose. See, it's too simple. You can't understand it. You almost, but not quite. Isn't that right? Mm-hmm. Comes. This is the noble truth of the cause of pain. Thus, monks, among doctrines unheard before me, and in me insight and knowledge arose, wisdom arose, knowledge arose, light arose. So here he is. He's done this meditation. He's achieved calm. And then he is asking himself, first of all, what is suffering? He says, okay, what am I doing? He's done this meditation. He's sitting there and he's saying, okay, what am I doing? Okay, I'm not practicing anymore of the extremes. He's done his bowl thing and he's sitting there on his cushion. He's had something to eat. Okay, I'm not going to practice any more extremes. Why? Because this is this and that's that, right? Okay, and And what is the middle path that I am now doing? Then, well, what am I doing? Well, I am practicing right view. What is right view? Awareness of dukkha is right view. Awareness that dukkha has a cause. Awareness that there is suffering. Wrong view is, I have to get out of this suffering. Or, this is my suffering. Or, I don't deserve to suffer. There is dissatisfactoriness. Right? You breathe in, you have to breathe out. You look at somebody, you have to blink. You sit one way, you need to shift. You eat, you got to do the dishes. Right? It's just continuous, isn't it? One of the things the Buddha said is that one of the greatest sufferings is maintenance. And if you don't have a house, you still got a house. And there's always some kind of maintenance. And you can try to ignore it, but it doesn't mean it isn't true. Or you can look directly at it and have an insight into suffering. An insight into suffering brings up three understandings. But the first one is the Four Noble Truths. You see the Four Noble Truths. And when you see the second noble truth, the causation, from a Buddhist point of view, the whole clinging to a self totally breaks apart, and the wheel of understanding, light arose in me. The wheel of understanding spreads. So this sutra goes on to say, and goes on to be abandoned and so forth, the noble truth and the wisdom, knowledge, light arose in me, light. And when monks, right, thus, when the wheel of the doctrine was set turning by the Lord, that's when the wheel of the doctrine was set turning by the Lord, when the wheel of was broken out of this small, bound place and was turning with universal understanding. Universal understanding. Thus, when the wheel of the doctrine was set turning by the Lord, the earth-dwelling gods raised a shout, "This supreme wheel of the doctrine has been set going by the Lord." And then the God of the heaven of the four great kings raised a shout. The God of the heaven of 33, the Yama gods, Tushita gods, Nimaranarati gods, the Paraminita Savati gods, the gods of the Brahma world, the supreme wheel of the doctrine has been set. A shout. And all the world systems, do you understand? All the world systems shook and shuddered. And it goes on describing the whole break down of belief in a permanent self or view. The whole breakdown of the fall of the movie making. So that suddenly there was universal consciousness rather than me in my film. So that's what the Paticca-samuppada is. Do you have any questions?
What you just described sounds like the price of gold going up and down.
It does.
Consciousness. For consciousness to arise, it has to be desire. Right? It has to be desire first, and then. And there's consciousness.
Propensities. I wouldn't call it desire there. It's propensities.
All right, propensity.
Karmic traces.
I was just going to say.
Karmic traces.
To me, it was.
In Morris's language, that's karmic traces, right?
Not mine.
Well, it is. That means something to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, karmic traces, propensities. Sankaras.
Yeah.
The word sankara in Pali is very difficult to translate into English. When you perform an action, that action leaves a residue, a trace in your consciousness, a tendency. You know, when you perform an action and you survive, that's considered to be a successful action. Right? So when you start to perform an action, like if you cut a pie and you cut it a certain way and it works, then the next time you cut the pie, you will tend to cut it the same way. Why? Because if you start moving not the same way, adrenaline is released by your body. If you start to repeat it the same way, endorphins are released by your body. So you are chemically induced to repeat what was successful before. That is, you get high if you repeat what succeeded in the past. And you get anxious if you don't. This is proven. This is fact. When you repeat an action that has been successful before, this is why, as you've heard me say so many times, you don't have to learn how to run upstairs the first time, every time. Because as you start to go, your body goes on, that's right, that's right, that's right, that's right. As your muscles start moving a certain way, your body's going, that's right, that's right, that's right. It's when you miss a step that the adrenaline kicks in, and there is that total gap. You know that gap? It is the best way for me to describe this. You know that gap when you step off a curb or miss a step or something is there when you didn't expect it to be, and just for a moment the mind is just there. Because you're not doing something based on the movie. Now, if you could run the movie and have that total openness, that would be what the Buddha accomplished. Because he didn't destroy any of the ability for his memory to work with like and dislike. He just broke open the sense that that was all there was. It's hard, eh? Hard to grasp this? Well, you know, most people wouldn't even try to describe Paticca-samuppada or Nirvana.
That's because I'm so dumb, eh? That's why I'm doing it, huh?
Yes?
Similar on my way over here, it just reminded me of my trip over here.
On your trip over here?
Trip over here, running a yellow light.
Oh my goodness, Bob!
And then the next one, when it turned yellow and I was a little farther away, well, I had to step on it a little farther.
Exactly.
It's just the memory. And then if you happen to see the light turn red as you're going under it, now you're guilty. The yellow, you're just, you know.
But that's exactly right. Even though you know it's not something to do, once you've done something, it's easier to do it again,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I found. I just found that the next time it turned yellow, just a little bit farther, I just stepped on a little faster. I knew I
because endorphins are released.
Yeah. It was interesting to hear it that way because
it
brought back that same feeling.
So if you in your childhood were able to avoid castigation by your parents by just being in fantasy or dream world all the time, then that seems like the most reasonable way to carry on your whole life.
Yeah. Mine was anger.
Yeah, we all have them.
Like you get one up on them and get mad before they get mad at me.
Yeah, because that's the successful pattern.
Yeah.
You see? And there are other options.
Never saw them before.
One of the options is to see how that became your choice. See how that happened. See how reasonable it is. One of the options, it is to say, is the Paticca-samuppada. It is the wheel, the turning of the wheel. You know, what the wheel represents in the Eightfold Path is right energy. When you see, when you have that insight of the Paticca-samuppada, you got right energy. Like energy is not constrained to the belief in a permanent self. Everything is not, the hub is not I. So it's wide open. James, what have you done? You've awakened the red. Now the red is prowling the halls, looking. The tiger is loose. Now we can't leave here. See what happens when you leave town? Just gets neurotic.
Slippery stuff, like meeting jealous of the law, but you get a feeling of that until some point reached where you become somewhat aware of some other way of operating within what I am. I seem to be set on very much like a computer.
That's what I is.
Yeah,
I is a computer.
Yeah.
It's a combination of all the previous data projected into the future. I is not what that is. That is something else. What this is something else. But the I, the tip of the iceberg, is a computer.
Yeah.
Based on all the data that's fed in, this is what's going to come up. And that's what time is. Past, present, future. That's a timeline only for I. It's not a time that exists outside of I. Outside of I, there are only discrete moments. And there are many primitive cultures. Their whole language is not based on past, present, future. They don't even have verbs set up like that. Everything is described in globs. When three people are cooking together, that's one whole word. If one person leaves, that's another whole word. It's a different, discrete moment. There are different causes interacting with each other. And so the result is not born out of the cause. Do you understand? Because that's only one way. And so the result has to be the same as the cause, right?
It's got to pass that genetic pattern along.
Do you understand? It is so... She is brilliant on this. She is just brilliant on this. This is the best book I have ever seen on dependent arising that so clearly talks about the big difference that the Buddha made was by realizing that cause and effect was not unilateral. And that our sense of time, past, present, and future, ignores whole areas of our potential. Because we're only looking at the one thing we want to focus on and ignoring all the potential causes that are also operating. It's only the tip of the iceberg, what we think.
It's just a partial view that you're coloring them, trying to cover the whole thing with the ones.
Yeah.
Going through a slit.
Yeah, exactly. See through a glass darkly. You betcha.
You only see part of the whole spider web, huh? That's where we're right here, and the spider web is of this.
Quite often, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite often we're so hypnotized by being sure that we're seen as the spider that we don't even see the web.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm important.
Seems to be an impulse to see more funny built in at the same time. We had noticed some funny thing at the old cars we drove in had dashboard and a narrow set of windows, little narrow windows. Now almost the car, three quarters of the car is window. It just seems to me an urge at least to get a bigger view.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
It occurs to me that we're somewhat like our own Pavlov. We're Pavlov and the dog all built into one.
And the lab.
I remember you mentioning about walking with a stone in your shoe.
Yeah.
And that type of behavior would be very useful for breaking those habitual...
For giving yourself a way to explore like and dislike. Because if you choose to practice like and dislike, you're not, you know, the sense of self feels really happy about that, you know. You're pacifying this ego clinging at the same time that you're making little inroads and cutting it down. If you don't choose to explore like and dislike, but you think it's your God-given right to only have what you like and get rid of what you dislike, it's almost impossible for you to examine like and dislike. But if I, you know, that's how you use the ego structure for liberation. Explore the places you don't like looking, just to see why you don't like looking there. Not because you're actually going to look there. I'll read you one more thing I chanted every day. This is one of the most beautiful. I put this in Body, Speech, and Mind. It's so beautiful. Subjects to be recollected every day. Well, that's got to be where it is. 60. There it is. We are continually driven to old age, there being no way to resist it. Is that true, Morris? We are continually driven to sickness, there being no way to resist it. Is that true? Sometime or other you're going to get the flu, aren't you? Is there any way you can resist it? You're headed right to it, aren't you? Not to mention other sicknesses, right? We are continually driven to death, there being no way to be resisted. Is that true? We are destined to lose and leave all our beloved ones and things behind. Is that true? Due to the law of karma, of action, of causality, of discrete moments. We are the maker of karma. We are the inheritor of karma. We are the womb or birthplace of karma. We are the attachment of karma and the pathway of karma. We are destined to receive the results of what we have done, both good and evil. Thus, these subjects are to be recollected every day. Pretty straightforward, huh? Well, according to the Buddha, action, karma means action, is volition, the motive, the propensity, the desire, the movement.
Propensity has quite a different ring to it than desire.
Well, it's levels, you know. Propensity is a karmic trait, but when it gets strong enough, it's a desire.
Degree of intensity.
Intention. Intensity. Yeah. And when a desire gets strong enough, it's a kalesa. A staining. It totally stains the whole consciousness. Mm-hmm. Or what we would call an obsession. Well, it is from the point of view of paticca-samuppada, it's a trance from the beginning, avijja. Avijja is a trance. Ignoring this, either willful or unwillful ignorance. Avijja. Dependent on ignorance arises. Sankhara arise the propensities. So it is ignorance that allows the propensities to have power.
Ignorant of other possibilities?
It isn't even a you are ignorant of it, but either willful or unwillful ignorance, And it can be very unwillful. It can just be because it's been done before, one is going to do it again, and there isn't any particular willfulness to it. Ignorance very many times is like Hannah Arendt said about evil. It's very banal. Very banal. Nothing much. Just sort of slopping along.
Funky computer turning on.
But practicing awareness, that's a whole other ballgame. Not awareness of anything except what is here. Why? What is the mind doing with that object? Does it feel wholesome or unwholesome? That's a very nice thing to be aware of. Is there clinging? Got 30 seconds. Is there any more questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Union time. I hope I've whetted your appetite a bit to look at the paticca-samuppada. Don't worry about not understanding it if you read it. Let that be the least of your worries. Just play with it a bit. Once you get the language in there, your curiosity will start you saying, what is that? And you'll look in and you'll look out and you'll get greater understanding. But there are two main veils in Buddhism. View, fixed view or primitive view, and conflicting emotions. Paticca-samuppada is the insight that clears view. Prajnaparamita is the state of being that clears emotion. Is that satisfactory? Okay. So, any other questions, answers, comments, and complaints? Last call.
Where do we find the text?
Oh, Mirror of the Dharma.
Thank you. I think that it's in the back of that short book that Heather put together on the last page.
I put that together.
She didn't take it off.
Yeah. Avijja, Pachaya, Sankara, Sankara. You know this. Don't you know this? Pachaya, Sankara, Sankara. What? Do you know it? Do you remember it? You just went from the first line to the last line and missed all the lines in between.
Anicca, vata, sankara.
Pachaya, sankara.
Upara, vaya, domino.
Oh, you're doing it. You're doing the meditation on death, impermanence.
Impermanence. Anicca, vata, sankara.
Yeah, that's not what I was saying.
Avijja,
not
Avijja. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm on a different route. Okay.
Yeah, you are. That's what he said. I missed it totally.
Yeah, I didn't hear you.
But I thought you were on the route of just leaving out the whole middle of this. You're doing the chant on impermanence.
Impermanence,
Anicca.
Yeah.
Anicca, vata, sankara. Little crossover in the wires there.
Yeah. Yep.
Dependent origination, one more time. Discrete moments arising. There's a very beautiful discrete moment of gold light in the middle of your body. And it discreetly, momentarily floods out and multiplies itself into thousands of billions of little gold lights that flood through the whole trunk of your body, right down your arms and legs. Right through your hand, it just spreads out through all your pores, every direction. Fills this whole room, just moves right through this house, is just transformed into this shining light, the whole block, the whole city of Edmonton. Anyone you want to pray for, just imagine them washed. Right through Alberta. Right through all of Canada, all of North America, the whole Arctic circle, the whole northern hemisphere of the planet, shining out in all directions, this infinite gold light, and wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, it's temporarily assuaged, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. Thank you for your great compassion.